Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Sarah LaDuke.
This is a how-to show about things you think you know how to do, because simple things are more complex than they seem. I'm David Reese. Let's do this.
Cartoonist, comedian, and artisanal pencil sharpener David Reese is the host of a new show, Going Deep with David Reese, which premieres tonight on the National Geographic Channel.
Guys, do you want to see something super depressing? These are the ice cubes that my refrigerator makes. First of all, they're not even cubes. They're shaped like slugs. Second of all, they don't look like ice. They're all milky and murky. And third of all, they sometimes taste like onions. I want to learn how to make big boy ice cubes that are shaped like cubes, that are clear like ice, and that taste delicious. You know, like the ice cubes in high-class magazine ads. I want to make the best ice cubes.
On each episode of the show, David and his team consult with experts on how to excel at seemingly simple day-to-day tasks, like how to tie your shoes, swat a fly, dig a hole, and yes, make an ice cube.
Franz and Patrick work at Arctic Glacier, which is one of the hottest brands of ice cubes. They're made in an ice factory that churns out a trillion tons of ice every 30 minutes. We should fact check that. Let's make some ice.
That's right.
The best thing about Arctic Glacier is all the amazing machines they have with all these funky old control panels. I almost wanted to just learn how to steal machines.
David, I love the show.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that.
I love it so much. I watched two episodes last night, and I watched them each like 1.5 times.
Wow. That makes me very happy. Thank you.
To catch the jokes. How did this project come to you? How did you hook up with the National Geographic Channel?
Well, I wrote that book, How to Sharpen Pencils.
You sure did.
And I had some friends, some TV producer friends, who had seen me give some of my pencil sharpening lectures, and they said, would you like to make a TV show? And I was like, okay. And we decided that we would make a show kind of in the spirit of How to Sharpen Pencils, where you take simple things that we do every day without thinking about them and try to really explore the technical details and best ways to do things and really celebrate all these quote-unquote simple procedures and tasks that we do all the time. And we pitched a bunch of networks, and National Geographic was really excited and gave us a lot of creative freedom. And I think being with that particular network got us access to certain experts that maybe we wouldn't have had if we'd gone with a goofier channel, so to speak.
Sure. So you learned everything that you know, which is just about everything I would think there is to know about sharpening pencils, over a number of years. Is this making the show been sort of like a concentrated version of that process?
Yeah, totally. I mean, it's been intellectually exhausting. And I still don't know as much about anything as I know about sharpening pencils. But the pencil sharpening experience, I didn't think there was that much to learn. And then, you know, in researching the book and sharpening thousands of pencils for people, it was that feeling of, oh my gosh, like, this is endless. This is bottomless. And I had the same experience with, you know, 10 different episodes, 10 different topics for this show. I mean, really, each episode could probably be 5 or 6 hours long. In fact, we were doing an episode on how to throw a paper airplane, and we met with NASA's chief scientist stationed at Edwards Air Force Base, and we were talking about the principles of, you know, how to create lift with a paper airplane. And at one point, he said, is this interview going to be cut down? And I was like, yeah, this interview is part of a huge episode. And then I asked, if we really wanted to cover everything about paper airplanes, how long would the episode have to be? And he said, it would probably have to be an entire season of television. So, yeah, you can learn a lot. The deeper you dig with all these simple procedures, the more things you uncover and the more connections you can make to other aspects of life. It's really been very, very stimulating and fun.
It's so fun, and it's funny, of course, because that's your modus operandi, whether you own it or not. You're hilarious. And but you look at the title of the show, How to Tie Your Shoes, an episode, How to Tie Your Shoes, for instance, and you think, how are they going to do, how could they possibly do even 20X minutes on this? And then there is so much to go into.
I'm so happy you said that, because that was a real guiding principle for us when we would choose episodes. We tried to choose episodes where if a viewer saw it listed on their DVR schedule or in TV Guide or whatever, we wanted their reaction to be, no way. There's nothing I can learn. There's nothing to learn about how to open a door, for instance, mm-hmm. or how to flip a coin. You just do it, you know? know? Because sometimes we would hear suggestions like, why don't you do an episode on how to brew beer? And be like, no way, because that actually sounds
hard.
Hard.
Yeah.
Like, there actually sounds like there's something to learn about that. We wanted to start with the most basic, simple topics to prove to people that, you know, the so-called ordinary world is really extraordinary. Like, it's amazing, all these simple things.
Tell me about, from one of the episodes I did get to see, Professor Shoelace.
Professor Shoelace, I've been obsessed with for a couple years.
Right. Which you said on the show, and I said, of course he has. Of course he's been obsessed with
them. Well, when we got the deal to make the show, I said, we got to do Shoelaces, and we have to blow our travel budget on flying Professor Shoelace over from Australia. So I finally got to meet, basically, I don't know if you would call him the Michelangelo of shoelaces, but this guy knows more about shoelaces and lacing techniques than probably anybody else on Earth. And it was such a thrill to finally meet this guy and have him teach me custom lacing techniques for different activities.
Professor Shoelace knew about so much stuff. At one point, we were at the mall in Jersey, and he was like, David, why don't I show you how to replace your aglets just using a cigarette lighter and some weird industrial plastic? I mean, this is the kind of man that we're dealing with. He dropped so much shoelace knowledge on me, it would take like 6 episodes to fit it all in.
We spent 2 days together. It was crazy how much he knew about shoelaces. It was so much fun, you know, coming up with particular things and saying, okay, is there a particular lacing method for riding a bike? Okay, is there a particular lacing method for one of your arms is asleep and you only have one hand? And anything we could think of, he was like, yep, we're going to do it right now.
My grandmother had only use of one arm and taught me to tie my shoes, which I said at the start of the episode to the person that I was watching it with. And then when you got to that part, I was like, that's not how she did it, but that's incredible that that would come up. So it really
totally
touched me personally.
Yeah. I mean, again, that's like the real spirit of the show, is that some of these things that we learned as children and probably haven't thought about since we learned them have incredible significance in terms of your autonomy or your sense of accomplishment. And tying shoes, if you do only have the use of one arm, is incredibly hard. And so we do go over a lacing technique that you can do successfully just using one arm. And, of course, there are other lacing techniques for people who have, you know, maybe limited use of their fingers. Their fine motor skills might not be up to par. And, of course, there are lacing techniques for those types of things. And that spirit of exploration we tried to bring to every single episode to show the significance of these things that we usually take for granted.
It looks like you have a lot of influence over just about every aspect of the show, but I imagine things are happening behind the scenes that you didn't know how to do, but you have a good team.
Oh, yeah, totally. I mean, you know, this is the first time I've ever made a TV show, and everyone on the crew and everyone on the production side were incredibly patient and helped me learn how to be on camera and how to, you know, ask the right questions, you know, not to have my back to the camera 75% of the time, which it turns out is like my natural instinct for some reason.
Oh, no.
And so my role in the show, you know, it was a mix of coming up with topics, doing some research, but they tried to shield me from a lot of the stuff that we actually learned so that we could capture it in the moment. So there are moments on the show where I'm learning something for the first time, and those moments are like really exciting and really powerful and great, and we wanted to have that. But it's been a very, you know, it's kind of like artisanal television. We had a small crew. We filmed a lot of it in my actual living room. I made all the animations and illustrations. I made a lot of the music. Like, it's like a handcrafted, slow-roasted, locally sourced, grass-fed TV show. Perfect for the Hudson Valley.
Have you adopted these better methods you've learned for tying shoes, making an ice cube, et cetera, et cetera?
Yes, my shoelace tying game has completely changed thanks to Professor Shoelace, because he taught me his method for making the standard double slippery reef knot that is the hallmark of a correctly tied shoelace. He taught me his signature technique, which allows you to tie that shoelace in about a third of the time. And I'm much better at opening doors now. We did an episode on how to open a door because I'm always intimidated by going into a restaurant and not being sure whether to push or pull the door. And now I know all the things to look for on the door itself, like all the clues that tell you how it's going to react when you push or pull on it.
Okay.
I've gotten over my phobia of revolving doors because we met with a track coach who specializes in baton relay races, who told me how to match the speed of the people moving, you know, in and out of the revolving door so it wouldn't break my flow. So it has been, I mean, so, you know, there's a lot of humor in it, but it is an honest-to-goodness how-to show. Like, we want people to come away not just with, like, an intellectual appreciation of these things, but actually a different and better way of doing these things.
It's such a perfect and great way to learn about, for instance, a lot of water science in the Ice Cube episode. You talk with very real scientists in a very real place and look at ice that is thousands and thousands of years old.
Yeah, and that was a totally awesome experience to go to the ice core lab where they store ice from, I think the oldest ice they have is about 400,000 years old, and get to handle this ice, which, because it's been under tons of pressure for thousands of years, has kind of had all the impurities squeezed out of it. I mean, it looks like glass, and you're just in this huge, freezing cold room filled with all this amazing historical ice. It was a really powerful experience. It really, you know, I'm not like a science guy, you know?
Mm-hmm.
For me, one of the most meaningful things about the show is really appreciating just how profound and poetic the practice of science is. And we also really made a point to try to capture the personality of these experts outside of just their area of expertise, but like just who they are as individuals, you know? Because sometimes I feel like in the media, scientists, you know, they show up on a news show, that you ask their questions and then they leave. It's very sober, you know, it's very serious. I'd always ask these people, like, what kind of music do you like? Or what kind of food do you... It turns out a lot of scientists like heavy metal. I was very encouraged by that.
Great.
A lot of AC/DC, Led Zeppelin fans in the science community.
Do you look at everything you do now as a possible topic for an episode of the show if it has a second season?
Yeah, totally. I mean, when we went out to pitch the show, we had a list of 100 topics.
Okay.
And people are constantly suggesting topics to us. So, yeah. There's a lot of things I know I could do better. That's probably the understatement of the century.
It's also exactly the thing you would say in that moment.
Yeah, right.
David, I hope that everybody watches this. It's so much fun while being incredibly educational. It's very quick and funny and smart and put together so well. I'm really, really psyched for you, and I want to thank you for taking the time to talk with me today.
Oh, Sarah, I really appreciate that. Thank you so much. I'm glad you like the show, and I hope everybody else does too.
Going Deep with David Reese premieres tonight on the National Geographic Channel.
So I had my shoelace, then I was thinking, so what else do I need to know? Knots. And the best place to learn about knots is on a big sailboat, because when you're way out at sea and you're a sailor, knots can mean the difference between life and the other thing. So if you're a sailor, like my man Mike here, knots are super important.
When was the first knot tied on a ship?
Probably on the first ship.
Which was when?
I don't know, but we're the second oldest profession, so.
First oldest? TV host.
TV host.
Yeah. We are paid to make people happy and bring them pleasure.
Yes.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.